Call to order this meeting of the Minnesota Senate Tax Committee. First item on our agenda is the adoption of the minutes from February 16th. Are there any corrections? Seeing no corrections, the minutes stand approved as presented. The first bill on our agenda this morning, Senator Morrison, Senate File 1470. Just one second.
Do we have Krista's thing?
Krista's.
Green sheet.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Morrison. You may proceed with your bill. If you would begin by explaining it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, thank you for hearing Senate File 1470. Senate File 1470 authorizes the city of Wayzata to impose a food and beverage tax. Wayzata has a small population of about 4,300, yet hosts large numbers of visitors from across the region and the state. Wayzata is a small town that provides public access to Lake Minnetonka for all Minnesotans. Year-round, whether boating, dining in its many bars and restaurants, shopping, biking, or enjoying Wayzata's chilly open on the ice, Wayzata is always full of visitors. The city is seeking authority to impose a local food and beverage tax to assist the city in its stewardship of its public amenities that thousands of visitors enjoy. And Madam Chair, with your permission, I do have Council Member Molly McDonald here to testify and Wayzata City Manager Jeff Dahl as well.
Senator Morrison, I wonder if you could explain the bill itself first, exactly what you're proposing and what it's going to be imposed upon.
Certainly, Madam Chair. So it would be to impose a food and beverage tax of 1% on sales tax of 1%, I should say of up to 1%. On gross receipts of all sales of food and beverages by a restaurant or place of refreshment as defined by resolution of the city.
And why the reason for imposing it on liquor, alcoholic beverages? Is that typical?
Well, Madam Chair, Wayzata is a destination city, and it's a small city, so many people come and there is the natural deterioration of the amenities from the many visitors. And with this smaller tax base, it's harder for the residents of the city to be responsible for some of the wear and tear that the many visitors impose on the city. But I should probably defer to City Manager Jeff Dahl to elaborate.
Okay, let's hear from your testifiers. Please explain the bill and why and the purpose for which it is intended, and if it is an exception to general law, or if it is in accordance with general law, and why you need a special bill. So whoever wants to testify first.
Sure. Chair Rest, would you mind repeating your question? I was having trouble hearing if it's an exception
or... Okay, I'm looking at the language of the bill.
Yeah.
And just wanting to have you explain it and the use of the proceeds in Subdivision 2. And is this in accordance with general law or do you need a special law? And why, if you need a special law, do you want to divert it from the purposes for which it's usually intended?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Rest and committee members. So the purpose of this bill is to impose a 1% food and beverage sales tax for the purpose of use towards park maintenance and capital improvements, as well as to support some public safety, specifically community-based public safety and business attention, retention and attraction in the city, but primarily for park maintenance and capital improvements.
Okay, further testimony? Anybody?
Good morning, and thank you to Senator Morrison, Chair, and the committee members. My name is Molly McDonald, and I serve on the Wayzata City Council. I'm also a small business owner. I have a retail store right in Lake Street. I thank you for allowing the city of Wayzata to testify today. And as you've heard, our request is for a 1% food and beverage sales tax. As the senator explained, we are a small suburban community of about 4,500 people, located just 10 miles west of the city. It has grown into a significant regional destination for employment, recreation, natural resources, shopping, and dining. The city prides itself on being welcoming to all and to having both the most beautiful and most accessible public access to Lake Minnetonka. However, being a regional destination means that our population size is not really indicative of the amount of people in our community. Employment alone nearly doubles the city's daily population. And we also have a vibrant restaurant scene that brings a lot of people in. About 90% of patrons to restaurants in the city are non-residents. Our understanding is that this ratio is one of the highest in the city, of any city in the state. This means that the vast majority of the public who utilize our infrastructure and rely on our city services do not pay any rent or property taxes.
Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Aurora Yeager. I'm the Deputy City Manager for the City of Wayzata. I wanted to build on some of the comments Councilmember McDonald made in regard to the need for this request. So Wayzata does not receive any local government aid or municipal state aid. And we actually contribute a net $3 million, or just about 10% of our total tax capacity, to the Fiscal Disparities Program. And so despite the fact that we contribute a significant amount of our total tax base outside of our community, we have a significant amount of regional visitors who are drawn to our city specifically to eat, but also shop, recreate, and work. And that significantly increases the demand on city services and the demand on our public amenities. This places a significant and increasing burden on our residents to pay for these services and amenities independently. That's what led us to the ask for the 1% food and beverage sales tax. This would help us fund significant investments in park maintenance and capital improvements, which are enjoyed by all of our regional visitors, while also supporting public safety and downtown businesses. We proposed a food and beverage sales tax specifically because, since it's a more specialized type of sales tax, it would not apply to essential items, it would not apply to every purchase, and instead would only apply to prepared foods and beverages, which we also think kind of matches the destination amenity for being a hub for dining as well. We feel that this is a good balance to mitigate the strain that regional visitors have on our community, while also not being too burdensome, especially to those on fixed incomes. We feel like this is a good middle ground to meet both needs. The City of Wayzata is therefore asking for the ability to utilize this tool, which many other regional destinations already use, to improve and maintain our regional amenities. We will continue to engage the restaurants in our community to ensure their viability with this tax, and we'll actually utilize a portion of the revenue for business retention and attraction purposes. I believe you have a one-page summary of our request in front of you. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about it. Again, thank you so much, Chair Rest, Senator Morrison, and committee members for your time today. We'll stand for any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions or concerns for the witnesses?
Madam Chair, I believe we have one more testifier.
You have one testifier. Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record, we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, committee members. Thank you, Senator Morrison. I just wanted to comment. I'm Jeffrey Dahl. I'm the city manager for the City of Wayzata. Just getting back to your original question, why we're asking this. And it's because we're kind of right in that sweet spot in between a local option sales tax and a lodging tax. And based on our communications with House staff, Senate staff, this does require special legislation. It's not one or the other. It's kind of in between.
We just want to make sure that when people come and they're asking for something, that they know they have to be asking for.
Totally.
Okay. So. But I appreciate your reminding us that you indeed do know. So, Senator Morrison, anyone else?
I believe there, Madam Chair, I believe there are other testifiers present.
Randy Stanley, may he be one? Okay, come forward. Mr. Stanley, welcome to the Tax Committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to read my testimony.
It's fine.
This is the first time I've done this. I'm a little bit nervous.
Don't.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members.
I will ask you to move the mic a little bit closer,
yes,
if you don't mind. Thank you.
Better? My name is Randy Stanley, along with my wife Sharon, stepdaughter, and son-in-law. We have owned and operated Six Smith Restaurant for 10 years in lovely downtown Wayzata, where life is lovely, lively, but not rowdy. Right, Molly?
Correct.
We have always found the city of Wayzata and its citizens to be collaborative and supportive through good times and bad. They have always been there for us, and we want to be there for them. When past issues arose, we always worked together to find equitable solutions for our business, the city of Wayzata, and Wayzata's residents. Consequently, we were surprised to learn about the proposed Wayzata 1% food and beverage sales tax last Friday, only 4 days ago. The notification did not come from the representative of the city of Wayzata, but from the Hospitality Minnesota and Terry Hummel, who is the owner of Gianni's, who will also be testifying. When I polled fellow restaurant owners in Wayzata over the weekend, none had heard about the proposed tax increase, which targets a single industry, especially one that has been significantly impacted by the pandemic. We were all surprised to hear that Wayzata is in need of additional funds given the healthy and robust growth and development in the city, especially through the proliferation of restaurant sales and sales taxes generated by the current restaurants and other businesses in Wayzata. As Wayzata businesses, we always look for opportunities to work as a partner with the city. Unfortunately, in this instance, we were left out. Before the city of Wayzata pursues or passes statute allowing the city to collect a food and beverage tax, the business community must be brought to the table. If Wayzata has shortfalls in the budget, the Wayzata community, all businesses and residents alike, should work together to find creative solutions that do not require a tax increase, or at least seek a tax equitable on all businesses. We have enjoyed tremendous success in Wayzata with our business Six Smith, and look forward to being of service to the city of Wayzata and its residents for decades to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stanley. Are there questions for Mr. Stanley? Mr. Stanley, are you familiar with the sheet of information that the city has provided the members of the committee, Senator Morrison?
I've not seen that.
Senator Morrison, do you have another copy of this with you that you could share with him? Okay, right there.
Okay. I see it now.
Yes, okay. I know that the city regrets that the business community, particularly the hospitality community, did not have as much information as they would want you to have. We will have an opportunity going forward for you to be informed and be persuaded to support it, or maybe you would continue to oppose it. But we're not passing this bill out of here today, and there would be time for Senator Morrison. And who's your House member, Senator Morrison?
Representative Acum.
Or I should say the other body representative.
Shocking, Madam Chair,
if I may.
You would have an opportunity to speak with Mr. Stanley and the city council and with others, and perhaps he could become a champion. Mr. Stanley.
May I add one thing, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
I would like it to be known that I am not necessarily opposed to this tax. We just need to learn more about it.
And Senator Morrison is shaking her head, and I'll come back to her and at some point and make sure that is the case. even though it's a small community, Senator Morrison, and many, many residents and people who live in the western suburbs patronize establishments in Wayzata, your community businesses need to be fully informed. So, any other questions or comments? We have one more testifier, and that is Terry Hummel. If you'd like to come forward. Ms. Hummel, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Ms. Hummel, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, we're happy to have your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Terry Hummel, and I'm the sole owner of Gianni Steakhouse, located in downtown Wayzata. Right now, I'm beginning my 13th year as the owner of this iconic restaurant that I believe is an integral part of the fabric of our community. I'm here today to share my concern about the pending 1% food and beverage sales tax in the city of Wayzata. I want to be very clear here. I am an ardent supporter of the town where I live and own a business. I love Wayzata, and I'm so fortunate to be a member of this town. The suggestion of a 1% sales tax was mentioned to me a few months ago, and at that time I had no objection. But when I learned that the bill was being introduced, I had a few more. And I also talked to several other of our businesses over the weekend, and they had questions, and more importantly was how it might possibly affect their business and the perception of a 1% sales tax. We've realized wonderful growth in our community over these last couple of years. As I like to say, but we all live and die together, and most of us, if not all, are single store owners. And as I like to say, we don't have a corporate cushion or bumper pads. We succeed and fail alone. Today, my concern is about the unintended consequences of this policy and potentially damaging effect it could bring to every food establishment. The current language for this tax singles out the restaurant industry, one that has been particularly hard hit by COVID. Although the restaurant category has had some modicum of recovery to date, the outlook for the future is not as robust as it's been in the past. The possibility of a looming recession, coupled with the ongoing challenges that we face, and I'm sure you've all heard this when we had other people testify, labor shortages, supply chain issues, and cost of goods going up at a rapid rate. I suggest that we cannot view the implementation of this tax as a one-off. We have to look at everything that's happening in a totality. There is other things coming down the pike like FMLA and PTO, so those are some really important things that are going to impact our business particularly hard. Before the bill moves forward, I propose that it would be prudent that our state and city officials convene to open the channels for discussion to ensure that all stakeholders understand the funding needs and validate the basis for the tax revenue projections. There is much more information and firsthand accounts that Randy and I could share with you, but time is our enemy. Please feel free to ask any questions you may have. We stand here at the ready to share our experiences. Today is no different than any other. I continue to volunteer to take a seat at the table to promote and educate the challenges of our industry. Thank you so much for your time and allowing us to speak to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Hummel. One of the things that we look at is competition with nearby cities and whether this is upsetting a level playing field. Do you know, Senator Morrison, what other cities nearby that you border on have a food and beverage tax? Would Wayzata be the only one? Does Plymouth have one? Does somewhere else have one?
Madam Chair, I'll defer to City Manager Mr. Dahl.
Sir, I lost your name here. Mr. Dahl.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Senator Morrison. We would be the only city in the West Metro by Lake Minnetonka that would have a food and beverage tax. That's really because we're unique in our cluster of awesome restaurants we have. Mm-hmm. But I know that Plymouth, Excelsior, and other points around us have other versions of sales, local sales tax, which we do not have right now.
I'm just only asking about food and beverage. Ms. Ms. Pollock, do you know? We're gonna find that out.
Madam Chair, members, I believe Mr. Dahl is correct. The Minneapolis has a food and beverage tax, but I think this is the only one that would be west of the in the metro area.
Thank you, Ms. Pollock. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Are there any other questions or comments for Senator Morrison? Senator Morrison, I think you have a unique challenge here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I mean, certainly the Tax Committee can vote for this, but I think you'd be much better off if you had the support of your business community in seeing the benefits that would be offered not only to the citizens, but to business owners and other other establishments that are not contributing to this, even though, like we do with a lot of sales taxes and taxes like this, we say it's all exported. You know, I think your thing says 90% of the people who eat in Wayzata don't live there. So that's often a strong argument to make, but I certainly would suggest that you and Representative Acom and the city have some more serious talks to gain a lot more support from your small but regionally important. I don't think anybody disagrees with that community. Any other comments?
Madam Chair.
I can't hear you. Yeah, okay. Any other comments on this bill? Senator Housechild is anxious because he needs to go next. Then Senate File 1470 will be laid over. And Mr. Dahl, did you want to say something more? Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Real quick, I just wanted to just mention that this has all been part of a public process. The City Council approved a resolution. We have engaged our business owners. We have a lot to do, and we actually have two meetings scheduled this week. So we need to get the word out more, but I just want to let the committee know that we've been talking about this for a while, and we need to do more, of course, but the journey continues.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Senator Morrison, we have been considering some bills of moving them to the floor that do not have any state cost. We're not going to do that with this one because we think you need more information and more support before we take it up. So it'll probably, if we move on it, it'll be in the omnibus bill and not before.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for your consideration.
Sure. No further action on this bill. Senate File 1470 is laid over. The next bill, Senator Westland, we're going to go with Senator Housechild, who has another bill up in a committee that is not as flexible as the Tax Committee. So, Senator Housechild, you bring us Senate File 52.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the Tax Committee, thank you for your time today. I'm excited to talk about Cook County because it's one of my favorite places to visit. If you haven't been, please get up there. It's a marvel. I was just up there on Friday visiting with Linda and other members of the community. This bill is a renewal of the lodging tax in Cook County, Minnesota. Cook County has an additional 1% lodging tax, and this bill renews that tax for another 15 years. This is in addition to the current 3% lodging tax. Lodging taxes above 3% require legislative approval, and that is why I'm bringing this bill forward today. This tax was added in 2008 and expires in November of 23. We are asking for a renewal this year for continuity of programming and budgeting. The additional 1% is targeted to promote local events and programming. Tourism is by far the largest industry in Cook County because it's so awesome. And the work done by Visit Cook County is a cornerstone to the economic well-being of the community, and this lodging tax allows them to do that important work. With that, please let me introduce my testifier, Linda Jerick, who is the executive director of Cook County Chamber of Visit Cook County.
I'm going to ask you first to do the same thing. Please explain the provisions in the bill, not just the reasoning for them.
Sure, sure.
What is it actually doing in subdivision 2 that you're removing?
So, currently there's a lodging tax of up to 3% allowed under section 469.190. And what this bill would do is allow Cook County to renew their additional 1% tax in Cook County and extend it for another 30 years.
That's not subdivision 2 that you've stricken the language for.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Madam Chair.
I said, I'm looking at the language of the bill. Subdivision 2 is stricken language. Why? And what does that do?
I may ask counsel for specifics of why subdivision 2 was stricken.
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair, members, it looks like the initial authority that was allowed to Cook County in 2008 authorized both the additional up to 1% lodging tax and an up to 3% admissions and recreation tax. Ms. Jerick might want to correct me here, but I am assuming that the admissions and recreation tax was not ever imposed, and so this language to strike it would be just because it is no longer necessary, but please correct me.
That is exactly correct.
Okay. Senator Halschild, you should have been able to have told me that, okay? And then,
thank you, Madam Chair.
And then on subdivision 4, increasing it from 15 years to 30 years, and I expect your witness will be able to tell us why that's necessary or why that's a good thing. One of the three. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for allowing me to be here today. My name is Linda Jurek, and I serve as the executive director of Visit Cook County, which is the destination marketing organization for northeastern Minnesota, an award-winning one at that. I also serve as the executive director of the Cook County Chamber of Commerce. Like I said, Visit Cook County is the destination marketing organization located in northeastern Minnesota. We're a little bit different because we have an organization of destination marketing that encompasses the entire county, where many times you'll see that just for city-related things. Our business really unites all of Cook County tourism organizations under one umbrella to achieve those greater marketing efforts. As is customary for DMOs or visitor bureaus, our marketing and branding initiatives are funded by that collection of lodging tax under statute 469.190. We represent 5 distinct communities, including Schroeder, Tofte, Lutzen, Grand Marais, Grand Portage, and the gorgeous Gunflint Trail. Like I said, under Minnesota Statute 469.190, we collect 3% lodging tax, and 95% of those gross proceeds go to the marketing and the efforts that we do in that regard. The 3% use of our lodging tax is overseen by the Visit Cook County Board of Directors with thoughtful input from staff, marketing partners, 3 tourism associations, and of course we maintain that accurate pulse of current tourism trends and opportunities, which certainly have been a gyration during the last 2.5 years of COVID. In addition to the 3% lodging tax, we enacted that 1% lodging tax in 2008, and you have that handout in your packet. 3 tourism associations came together in 2008 and ultimately were successful in gaining the support for that additional 1%. And now, like we said, we're looking for renewal. The renewal is supported at this time and has been approved twice now by the Cook County Board of Commissioners as we report to them every year with our budget for that 1%. It's also been approved by all of our lodging partners and three tourism associations, so it's received wide support across the county. The renewal is vital for our tourism economy in order to continue to make contributions that solidify and enhance our community assets and include that wider awareness and support visitor growth. Our number one industry in northeastern Minnesota is tourism, and we work hard to broaden that, but it's tough. It's such a gorgeous place, and that is our number one industry. We utilize the 1% lodging tax to support activities, events, music, arts and culture, and ultimately add to that higher quality of life in northeastern Minnesota. Like I said, there's accountability and analysis each year of that 1%. We have implemented a thorough evaluation and budgeting process. And in fact, this week we meet with every tourism association and they allocate that 1% funding that is coming from their area. We don't have a large event center. However, we have many partnering organizations in the tourism industry that work to bring people there and really rely on the funding that we use our 1% for. Just a couple of examples I'd like to give. Over $55,000 has been allocated to the culture of art, art along the lake, fall art, studio tours. We have allocated over $70,000 to dog sledding events, $300,000 to a local nonprofits, including North House Spoke School, the Grand Marie Art Colony, WTIP Community Radio, and all of 13 Cook County Historical Societies. Over $300,000 has gone to biking events, and really important, $650,000 has supported the culture and the musicians in our area. We've seen growth, being very, very dutiful and being strong stewards of that money. We've seen growth in lodging tax collection overall. April and May, 93% growth. June, 156%. And in November, 39%. We also estimate an increase in visitors by approximately 40,000 annually from 10 high impact events alone that we support. The renewal is important this year as it will sunset in November of 2023. And the failure to extend that 1% collection will be felt immediately countywide in November 23 with a loss of support to local nonprofits, musicians, artists, cultural programming. The list is very lengthy. And with that, I'll take any questions. And thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Hochschild, and all you committee members. I'm really happy to be here today.
Ms. Jurek, that right now, the tax, the 1%, is going to expire in
November of 2023. The collection expires.
Okay, in 2023. And so in order for it to continue, you need the approval here. And then what additional action then from the city or the county?
There would be none if this gets approval. We've already had the approval from the county, the city, the association, so it really would be just rolling forward in the continued collection.
And the if you don't have to take any further action, then is the 30 years, when does the 30 years start?
The 30 years will start at the expiration date of November 2023.
Okay, so it
when
would
the
be,
15 years, right.
So it would be whatever that would be.
What is that?
I did the arithmetic.
So just a clarification.
Yep.
Based on the language that I'm seeing, I believe what we're actually doing is going back to when it was first imposed and implementing a new 30-year standard. So it's actually 15 years. Just to.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. Correct.
Okay. That I was confused. Thank you, Senator Hauser. I was confused by understanding the language in subdivision 4. So it actually gives it another 15 years, not a 30-year start date in November of 23. Is that correct, Mr.?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Questions, comments? Senator Nelson. And I believe, Senator Hauschild, this bill was in the 2022
That's
Conference
correct,
Committee
Chair.
Report recommendation. Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that was just going to be my comment. This was the Bach provision that was in the conference committee report, and our understanding at that time was exactly as you noted, Madam Chair, repealing the admissions and recreation tax, but doubling the extension or the duration from 15 to 30 years for the remaining tax.
Okay, Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Hochschild. And actually, I was going to make the same point that it was in the 2022. So we're all saying the same thing. But once again, since I do have the microphone, Senator Hochschild, we're always so impressed that citizens and activists from your district come down, even in inclement weather, and testify in person in support of these initiatives. And the committee is very grateful for that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions for Senator Hochschild or his witness? The revenue estimate here shows no state impact. Ms. Jurek or Senator Hochschild, do you know of any opposition in Cook County from businesses, individuals who oppose this? Ms. Jurek or Senator Hochschild?
I'll let
No, there isn't any. I mean, you're always going to have one person here or there who is going to oppose. But no, we've done a lot of good work in the last couple years, visiting with many contingencies of people, and I haven't had any opposition. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I would just add, I was up in Cook County last week and did a roundtable with business leaders, and all of them said this was one of their top priorities.
Good. That's a good recommendation. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, Senate File 52 will be laid over for consideration, the omnibus bill. The next bill we have, Senator Westland. Senator Westland and I have the privilege of representing the city of Plymouth in the Minnesota Senate. So welcome to my colleague, Senator Westland, and the mayor and the city manager. Senator Westland, if you would look at the language of the bill and explain what it does, and then we'll take your testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm proud to serve the city of Plymouth along with you. I know you only have a small part, or you used to have a small part of it, but I know that it's... Oh, that's right. You have the one corner.
Precinct 16.
That's right. Precinct 16, southeast of Medicine Lake. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's my pleasure to be here for the first time before the Tax Committee. I suspect it won't be the last time this session. So if you will look at the bill, really, this was a provision that was passed in 2019, and it permitted the city of Plymouth to have an additional lodging tax. The part that we are seeking to change today is the removal of the sunset provision, and that's really the only change that we're making. So the merits, the underlying merits of the tax have already been discussed and approved in a prior legislature, but the city of Plymouth is seeking to have the sunset provision removed. In the city of Plymouth, and I do have Mr. Callister, who is the city manager, and Mayor Washi are joining me as well, who can probably provide additional details to this. But it is important to know that there are a number of other jurisdictions throughout the state who have similar local lodging taxes and who do not have sunset provisions. So we would be asking for that piece to be removed to allow this lodging tax to continue without a termination date. The lodging tax does go to fund capital facilities that are used by the non-residents of the city who come to visit Plymouth, and also used for some other purposes, such as marketing and so forth. But I would love to turn this over to whomever would like to go first to explain this in some greater detail, Madam Chair.
Mr. Mayor, would you like to begin? Identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Washi. I am the mayor of the city of Plymouth. I also have with me Dave Callister, the city manager, who is available for any questions that may come up from the committee. I just have a few comments. Thank you for hearing Senate File 258. Senate File 258 removes a 10-year sunset from our lodging tax, as Senator Westland stated. We would like to be treated the same as all the other cities who have been granted this authority. We are here today to ask for removal of the expiration date, December 21, 2030. Two-thirds of the lodging tax helps pay for capital investments, including the Plymouth Community Center, a regional asset that draws people to Plymouth for conferences and other events, boosting the local economy through hotel stays, dining, and shopping. While the lodging tax is set to sunset after 10 years, the debt used to finance the Plymouth Community Center is a 20-year term. Since opening in 2022 of January, the Plymouth Community Center has welcomed 425,000 guests, sold 57,000 tickets for the Cube, which is an indoor accessible indoor playground that hosts visitors from around the metro area. And then in addition to the Plymouth Community Center, the city is home to a variety of other popular recreational assets, including the Plymouth Ice Center, one of the most heavily utilized public ice arenas in the area. In 2022, the Plymouth Ice Center hosted more than 820,000 visitors for regional, state, and national hockey tournaments and events. In March, the facility will host a five-day USA Hockey National High School tournament, which will bring in 48 teams to Plymouth from around the country, including players, coaches, fans, and parents. Plymouth is a unique community as it attracts tourists through a vibrant mix of city-owned and maintained recreational amenities that generate hotel stays, restaurant visits, and retail and shopping. The lodging tax approved in the legislature in 2019 allows the city to invest directly in these facilities without putting the entire burden on Plymouth taxpayers, and allows the users of these facilities to help pay for the amenities. Plymouth is not alone. A partial list of cities who have been granted legislative approval to use their local lodging tax for capital construction costs or straight into the general fund to use for any city expense, including capital, as opposed to being sent to a marketing organization, include Tofty, Schroeder, Lutzen, Biwabik, Proctor, Marshall, Winona, Brooklyn Center, Two Harbors, Bloomington, Rochester, Minneapolis, Duluth, and St. Paul. Examples of projects the legislature has allowed various cities to use the local lodging tax include community festivals, an airplane, recreational facilities, a marina, historic locomotive, park facilities, emergency response training facility, sports arenas, downtown improvements, recreational facilities, basketball facilities, civic centers, retail facilities. Plymouth's top-notch facilities draw tourism to the region and benefit surrounding communities, and funding for capital investments from the lodging tax help make that possible. A recipient of many state and national awards for recreational initiatives and infrastructure, the city of Plymouth is known as a premier destination in Minnesota for recreational tourism, which is why we're asking the state to remove the sunset period of 10 years on the special lodging tax. This will allow Plymouth to continue investing in quality recreational facilities, as well as further market and promote the community. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. We will stand for any questions.
I'm sorry, did you want to testify as well? Or?
Madam Chair, committee members, Dave Callister, city manager. I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Callister. Ms. Pollock, how many cities, and the mayor listed a number, have their lodging tax in perpetuity?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure of the number, but that is the standard, that the additional lodging tax would be into perpetuity. I'm not sure of the number or if there are others that had a limit on their duration, but I can certainly get back to the committee.
Well, Senator Westland and Mr. Mayor, Were they mad at you that they only gave you 10 years rather than not imposing a sunset at all? Do you recall, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Callister, what the circumstances were that we only allowed a 10-year period for this? Was it to see if it would work or if you could actually use it? Do you recall the conversation that allowed the sunset, since, according to Ms. Pollack, and that was my recollection as well, but I don't know for certain, most cities, even if they were going up to 6%, did not get a sunset. Why did that happen?
Madam Chair, our original request at that in the 2019 session did not include any sunset. We did not ask for that. I was not privy to any of those discussions that went on at the legislature at the time, and I'm not aware of why it was rife with a 10-year sunset. I'm sorry, I can't give you any more background.
Okay. Mr. Callister, do you recall?
Madam Chair, committee
I
members.
I don't, is why I'm raising that. Yeah. I don't recall.
I would concur with the mayor that it happened in committees. We didn't know about it until it was passed.
It happened in the conference committee, or it happened in the bills?
Madam Chair and committee members, I don't recall how it was arrived at.
Senator Westland, we're probably going to look that up to see why, but obviously, or not obviously so much, but Ms. Pollack has indicated that it was unusual for there to be a sunset imposed. So we'll do a little bit more sleuthing on that. Are there comments or questions for the two witnesses so far? If not, is Mr. Quillis here? Would he like to speak to us?
I'm sorry.
I'm calling on Mr. Quillis. It's a witness. I'm sorry. I need this table is too wide for my voice. Mr. Quillis, welcome to the committee, and we're pleased to have your testimony after you identify yourself.
Madam Chair, morning. Members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis, and I'm representing Hospitality Minnesota as well as the Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Bureau. And hopefully I can provide some history to this, Madam
Thank you.
Chair.
It would be very helpful.
To go back to the beginning, under Senator Housechild had referenced it, under 469.190, cities can already go through and enact up to 3% lodging tax as long as 95% of that is used for marketing and promotion.
Exactly.
We have, both the associations I represent vigorously have defended this statute, protecting its intent to be used for marketing and promotion. The only reason that lodging facilities agree to this tax is what I call putting heads in beds, Madam Chair. So the only reason the cities can do this, they can do up to 3% and use it for marketing and promotion. The only reason they would come to the legislature would be to go above that 3% or use it for something other than marketing and promotion. And we've had a long-standing opposition to using it for capital improvements. We think that cities have other funding sources available to them, local sales and use taxes, they can go through and raise property taxes, or come to the legislature with a bonding proposal specific to capital improvements. So in 2019, Madam Chair, as a matter of fact, I know who the Senate author of it was, but the city of Plymouth came to the legislature and asked to go above the 3% that they could enact, so it would be a total of 6, and then to use that for capital improvements in their city. And we oppose that. Both the associations I represent oppose that, Madam Chair, because we don't think that funding should be used for capital improvements. And some of the capital improvements have been referenced, but trying to make the nexus between taxing a hotel for parks and trails and softball fields, we think it's a difficult connection to make. Ultimately, what the legislature decided to do was what I'll call a hybrid model. They allowed the city of Plymouth to go up to 3% on top of the 3% that they could under existing law and capped it at 6%, and then created this hybrid model where they went through and said they could use 2/3 for capital improvements and 1/3 for marketing and promotion, and then put a sunset on it. And I think that was, if you will, a concession to the opposition that I had. And we opposed, so we opposed the original use for capital improvements. We opposed the hybrid model, Madam Chair.
But you accepted
it. And then we would
it.
Also oppose removing that sunset. We just think there are other options for the city of Plymouth to go through and fund these capital improvement projects, such as property taxes or coming up for a bonding proposal. But that, it was ultimately a hybrid model created by the tax committee, the conference committee, and that's is some of the concession, I think, Madam Chair, would be the history of it to the opposition from Hospitality Minnesota and Association of Convention and Visitors.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Quillis, and certainly for refreshing my memory. Was I the author of the original legislation?
Madam Chair, you are correct.
I thought that might be. Ms. Pollack, are there other cities that ask for the same kind of additional 3% that then ended up with, you call it a concession, I'll call it a compromise on their request?
Madam Chair, I would have to look at all of the authorizations that we've had over the years. Certainly, up to an additional 3% is not uncommon. Some ask for, you know, up to an additional 1% and so forth. But to the extent that a bill is introduced, has asked for up to 3%, and then as enacted with something lower than that, I would have to check the bill history and the authorization and the enactments.
Mr. Mayor, or Senator Wesslin, was this bill introduced last year as well?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. And Senator Nelson, what was the outcome of it last year?
Madam Chair, I do not recall this bill or much about it.
Ms. Pollack, was this bill in the 2022 Conference Committee?
Madam Chair, yes. I believe, however, that the provision in the 2022 conference agreement extended the sunset date rather than striking it.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wesslin.
So just to sort of reset the conversation a bit, the legislature already passed the ability for Plymouth to do this, so we're not really relitigating the underlying statute. What we are asking, what the city is asking, is that they be on the same playing field as every other jurisdiction who has had this approved for them, and as has been verified by Ms. Pollack. I will let the mayor address this as well, but we are simply asking that the sunset provision be removed. It is important for these funds to actually go to assist with the capital investment in facilities that are being used by folks outside of Plymouth. It is not just parks and trails. It is the Plymouth Community Center. It is Ice Arena. It's many other actual facilities that require ongoing capital investment.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I would just add that, you know, of the 14 plus cities that we are aware of that use this for either for general funds or for capital improvements, I can go through and give you the listing of all the recreational facilities all these different cities are utilizing those funds for, if you'd like. But there are many cities in the state that use a lodging tax. They have no sunset provision. And they're using them for different recreational facilities within their cities.
Okay, are there any questions, Senator Nelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the testifier just, my question was that no expiration date. I don't recall that happening very often, but certainly many of these other cities do have these local option or these lodging taxes that could be that do many different have many different uses. But it's the in perpetuity that is a little bit perplexing.
Well, I think from what I heard from Mr. Quillis, it was the use to which the lodging tax this. It was being used for capital rather than for capital projects rather than the original purpose and ongoing purpose of the lodging tax, which is for tourism and marketing of the businesses in the city of Plymouth. Is that correct, Mr. Quillis?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I missed the last part of that.
The original purpose of the lodging tax is not for capital improvements.
That is correct, Madam Chair. And there, it's a long history that goes back to 1972 and the Minnesota Miracle and how this has changed and evolved over the years. And some of the cities that have been mentioned that have been using this for different purposes were grandfathered in before some of the changes that happened. I think the last one was 1982 is when they came through and made some changes in the lodging tax. So some of the major cities were grandfathered in, and some of them also where the lodging tax is used for capital improvements. If you'll look in Bloomington, it's the Mall of America. In St. Paul, it's
XL Energy
Center.
Of course it would be the Mall
Center.
Of America. What don't they get?
You know, in Minneapolis, it's for the convention center. They're for major economic development projects where the lodging facility has been consulted and agreed to that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess as a former councilman and mayor, I usually opposed, when I was in local government, the requests from staff to add fees and different small taxes on utilities and this and that, no matter what the cause was or the purpose was for them. When we start to do that, when we start to expand those capabilities, pretty soon, it's really hard to hold local government accountable for the decisions that they make because, well, you know, it isn't really costing our taxpayers as much because they can go out and tax this other group of taxpayers who come in and out. And I think that it isn't necessarily the best way for local government to be responsible for the improvements they have to make. And I think in the 10 years that I've been here, Madam Chair, we see different requests coming. Well, try to amend this, change this. And sometimes I think we do tend to stray too far from what the original purpose of local sales taxes are, and board and lodging taxes. And I think that the opposition expressed by the hospitality group and the chamber does have merits. And I think we need to be careful that we aren't creating a system that becomes less transparent to the taxpayers of the community.
Madam Chair.
Senator Westlin.
Once again, I simply want to say that a couple of things. We aren't debating the merit of the underlying tax. It's been passed. What we are discussing is whether or not it should be have a sunset provision. The sunset provision was never discussed with the mayor, or with the city manager, or anyone in Plymouth. It was a surprise to them. And there is a reliance on this to continue to maintain the Plymouth Community Center, which is one of the heavily used facilities within Plymouth that people come from outside Plymouth and would be utilizing lodging facilities. So again, we're talking about removing the sunset provision, which was never intended to be part of this to begin with, but I'll let Mayor Washi also address this.
Yeah, and I would just point out that
Mr. Washi.
We do have 20-year bonds on our community center, and this does sunset after 10 years. But also, since the lodging tax went into effect, none of our hotels, and to point out, this is a pass-through. This isn't like an extra expense that the hotels have to take on. Many of the cities have this type of tax, whether it's through marketing or some sort of lodging tax, and that doesn't defer people from staying in those hotels. So I understand why the hospitality industry is against it, but I would point out that since we put this lodging tax in place, we have not heard one hotel in our city subjecting to it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any other questions or comments for Senator Wetzlin or anyone else to testify? Do we have someone else? Mr. Callister?
Madam Chair, committee members, I wanted to clarify a few things. I know
okay. It's
been mentioned that it's 3% plus 3%.
Mr. Callister, I don't think you identified yourself to begin with.
Dave Callister, City Manager.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to clarify that it's a 3% tax. The intent is a 3%, two-thirds of it to use for capital improvements, one-third for destination marketing efforts. Not a 6%. Could we do a 6%? Yes. Are we? No. It's 3%, so I want to avoid that confusion. And then to some of the points made about why can't the city do just put it on the property tax. Well, it is on the property tax, and I wanted to point out that the lodging tax that we're using because of the 2% lodging tax here contributes about 18% of the total debt service payments, and the rest of the 82% is paid from local property taxes, realizing that locals do benefit as well as region. So I think that's a good balance for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callister. Any further comments or questions? Thank you very much, Senator Wetzlin. And again, it is a pleasure to share the City of Plymouth with you here in the legislature. Next is Senator Seeberger. Senator Seeberger brings us, and that bill will be laid over. Senator Seeberger brings us Senate File 1113. Not exactly a property tax or sales tax extension of anything, but here you are anyway. And so we welcome you and Mr. Lake. Senator Seeberger, if you would explain the rationale for Senate File 1113 as it is in the language of the bill. And if members look at that, the meat of the bill is on page four, lines 5 through 11, and then 424 and 425. Senator Seeberger, if you would explain that language and then the rationale for it, that would be very helpful. So page 4, lines 5 through 11, what happens there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The intent or the purpose of this section of the bill, page 4, 4.5 through 4.11, is to close a loophole that's been discovered as it relates to single-member LLCs. These single-member LLCs are treated differently than any other form of an LLC in that for tax reporting purposes, they do not get the benefit of a tax credit for taxes reported and paid to another state. So this section is meant to close that loophole.
Mr. Lake, if you would identify yourself for the committee, either you or Senator Seeberger, can you give us some background about why this was missed? Deliberate or just accidental?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Lake. I am representing the Minnesota State Bar Association. Madam Chair, our understanding is this is really just an oversight, an issue that should have been dealt with and hasn't been. And I would note as well, Madam Chair, that that section was also included in the department's bill, which has passed the committee.
Okay. Are there questions? Senator Seeberger, you may know that the department agrees with you, and that Mr. Lake, excuse me, and this provision has been included in the department's technical and policy bill, so the likelihood of it being included in any final action is very high. Any questions or comments? None. I think we are going to agree with Senator Seeberger and the Bar Association and the department that this is an oversight that should be corrected.
There's another section of the bill. There's a sales tax exemption.
Big point.
There's a sales tax exemption. There's another part of the bill.
Okay. The other part of the bill, oh yeah, is the sales tax provision. Senator Seeberger, you want to explain that? And that comes in section 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a similar issue as to the other issue. This relates to the sale or transfer of single entity LLCs. And again, would close a loophole. It would permit Minnesota residents who are sole member LLCs to claim the credits. Again, it would fix treatment for when these are transferred, sold, or otherwise disposed of.
So, Mr. Lake, this is a sales tax issue so that it be disregarded. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair. So if you'd like, I can just give you a little bit of background and an example of how this would occur.
So,
Madam Chair, what we're trying to do here is address, as Senator Seeberger mentioned, LLCs are very flexible business entities. They're very flexible for tax purposes as well. They could be taxed as corporations or partnerships, or in the case of a sole owner of an LLC, they could be taxed as a disregarded entity. So the tax issues are dealt with on the owner's individual tax return. And this is very attractive for a sole proprietor because they don't have to file an extra business tax return. The trouble in this particular context is that an unsophisticated taxpayer who maybe can't afford to get professional tax advice on the front end might end up walking into a sales tax trap when there is a transfer of tangible property. And when I refer to that, the most common example would be office equipment. So the LLC is formed. The owner transfers, say, $5,000 or $10,000 of office equipment to the LLC. If it's a multi-member LLC, taxed as a corporation or a partnership, that's not a taxable event. That transfer is just considered a reorganization. However, in the case of a single-member LLC that is treated as a disregarded entity, it is taxed.
Yeah, they don't get the exemption. So they're
correct.
Paying sales tax based on relationship between the
correct.
Two.
So all we're trying to do here, Madam Chair, is just create a level playing field so that no matter how the entity is treated for tax purposes, with respect to transfers of tangible property, all LLCs are treated exactly the same. None of them have to pay the sales tax. And what we think we're doing here is just aligning the law with a reasonable Minnesotan's intuitive expectations that if they transfer tangible property that they own to a business entity that they own, it shouldn't be a taxable event.
Are there questions for Senator Seeberger or Mr. Lake? I would direct members' attention. This does have a cost, as you're aware of. it's not a lot, but it is $700,000. So we will be paying attention to that as we move forward. But I think this is going to be received favorably as well. Any other questions? Comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Seeberger, Mr. Lake, and Senate File 1113 is laid over. Senator Mitchell here yet?
She is.
There she is. Welcome to the committee, Senator Mitchell.
I
Senator Mitchell brings us Senate File 475, another proposal with regard to the lodging tax. This is, as I recall, this is a new effort. This was not part of any prior bill. Senator Mitchell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may say, happy Mardi Gras.
Same to you.
Yes, this is a little bit similar to what I just heard Senator Westland propose, which is that we are in Woodbury using the 3% lodging tax. And this would allow still 1% of that tax to go to marketing, but or of the 3%, 1% or a third, and then 2% or two-thirds to be going to improvements to recreational facilities. So I would ask for consideration of Senate File number 475 to do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So this lodging tax is, you're proposing that not all of it, though. Is that right? Reading the language now.
Yes, ma'am. So
two-thirds,
Madam Chair.
So 2 cents out of the 3 cents. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So your testifiers?
Yes, I have the
mayor?
City administrator.
Who do you want to start with?
And the mayor.
Madam Mayor, if you want to begin.
Absolutely.
If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Senator West, for allowing the City of Woodbury to come before you today. I am Ann Burt. I am the mayor of the City of Woodbury. I'd like to begin by thanking Senator Mitchell for her support and leadership in assisting the City of Woodbury with a bill to allow flexibility to a portion of its lodging tax for specific purposes. I've got three brief reasons why we're before you today with this tax modification. The first is in the category of regional overburden. As the economic hub of the East Metro, Woodbury is a regional destination, not only for economic amenities like retail, healthcare services, entertainment, and dining, but also is a recreation destination in the region that brings visitors to our city. Our hope is that with funding from the local lodging tax, the city can continue to add and enhance our recreational offerings as local and regional needs and desires change. Woodbury is now the eighth largest city in the state. We have a population of over 80,000 people. We are the largest city in Washington County with over one quarter of property valuation, jobs, and population. And we're also the East Gateway into the state of Minnesota. Our recreational facilities are crucial support of our large regional presence in the whole East Metro. Item number two is the idea of local control and city council decision making. Last year, we enacted the 3% lodging tax as allowed by State Statute 469.190. However, as you may know, the lodging tax may only be used for the operation of convention and tourism as allowed by law. We are asking for reasonable accommodation to use up to 2% of the lodging tax to be directed to capital construction improvements for recreational facilities that we will be promoting with our DMO. And then thirdly, precedence. We are aware that this type of request has been granted for other public entities and for similar facilities. This common sense tax policy ensures that our local government has a real choice in financing our recreational improvements and does not pay for overburden of providing regional recreational facilities. This is not a new tax policy and costs the state of Minnesota absolutely nothing. In closing, Senate File 475 would allow Woodbury to use a portion of its lodging tax for specific purpose authorization that will result in benefits to both residents and businesses in the City of Woodbury and to regional non-residents and businesses. Funding new recreation projects with a local lodging tax will more closely distribute the cost of the project to the benefactors of those enhanced facilities and supports the principle of local control, which we hope you concur with, and has clear tax basis in tax policy precedents. Therefore, on behalf of the City of Woodbury, I humbly ask you to consider allowing our City Council the flexibility to use up to 2% of our lodging tax for recreational facilities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Senator Mitchell?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Quillis, you have another testifier?
He is here for questions, Madam Chair, okay. If you have questions.
Are there any questions? Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. This sounds just a bit like the bill that we just heard with the Plymouth lodging tax. And my question is, if I understand it correctly, this proposal would diminish by half the portion of the lodging tax going to your local convention visitors bureau and for convention center promoting. And it would then take that in a sense, then increase by another. It would add that increase to other uses. And so my question is, I'd like to hear from your visitors bureau and your local convention promotion entity. Are they in support of this?
That's a very good question. I have to say,
Mayor,
we
need to go through the chair when you speak.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Just say, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, may I answer that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Please do.
I apologize for my inexperience of this. The City Council just enacted this 3% sales tax last year. It is going into effect April 1st. We have not yet coordinated and established our DMO, but we are in the process of doing that. In fact, we are putting together a task force for that. I'll be chairing the task force. So again, we're just really starting to set that up at this point in time.
Madam Chair, if I may also help
Senator
with that
Mitchell,
a little
right
bit.
Senator Mitchell, go right ahead.
If it helps Senator Nelson, the facilities that this would go to are some of the same things that would also be drawing people into the city. So even though it's not direct advertising, it would go, for example, possibly to a Central Park renovation, which is a really our community center that brings people in. It would go to possibly, we have a big recreation center where seniors go to walk in the winter and there's ice hockey and everything else that's played indoors. So these are some of the same things that are drawing people into Woodbury where they might be using the lodging anyway. So even though, in my opinion, it's not maybe direct advertising, it's some of the same things that would get them to go stay in the hotels.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Mitchell. That's true, there is this interconnection, which I think we all are so aware of. But I would just say, it just seems a little premature to come now after the tax, as you said, was recently enacted, and it would be so much more powerful if you could come with the support of your visitors and convention bureau, saying they support this altering of the what the tax could be used for.
Senator Mitchell, your other testifier,
yes.
If you'd identify yourself,
Madam Chair,
please, for
Clint
the record.
City Administrator. Thank you, Senator Nelson, for your question. So the destination marketing organization that we are standing up is a city DMO. It is not a third-party entity. So the City Council will be the chair of the DMO. We are having an advisory committee stood up to advise on how we should create it. So the DMO and the city, much like our HRA, much like our EDA, is one in the same. So the City Council has been asking, frankly, for almost a decade for this kind of relief from the tourism tax to use it only for operating to be able to have it for capital. So we've been at this request for a very long time. And obviously, as communities have received it, we've modified our request for the current one that stands before you today.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just one further comment then. I don't want to read too much into that, but it sounds like you're trying to replace the local convention and visitors bureau with the City Council. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Clint Gridley.
Sir.
No, we do not have currently a destination marketing organization or a convention visitors bureau. With the enactment of the tax that is being stood up, but the intention of the council is to have the council be the oversight of the destination marketing organization, and that it be internal to the city organization. So several cities, not a lot, but several cities have that kind of construct. This is not a separate third party, and we have the task force, as the mayor said, it involves the Chamber of Commerce, it involves hospitality, it involves economic development groups, so it has a wide variety of people that's going to help us form it, create it, and stand it forward. But it is part of the city organization in terms of its intent.
Sarah Nelson.
Madam Chair, not to belabor this too much, but at some point I'd like to hear from Mr. Quillis. Then, so you don't have a Visitors and Convention Bureau right now, you're saying?
We are,
Madam Chair. I'm sorry, you have to go through, Chair.
We are in the process of standing it up, but it is not going to be an independent, separate entity. That's the main.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I think it would be important at some time to hear from Mr. Quillis about, or I would want to know, why was there this differentiation between the local Visitors Convention Bureau and City Council, mm-hmm. and having a separate, as opposed to having it as part of the City Council? I think that's just an important distinction that I'd like some more history on.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. We can certainly make inquiries of the hospitality industry as it operates in Woodbury. Any other comments? Thank you very much, Senator Mitchell and Madam Mayor, sir. Senate File 475 is laid over for. Yes, sir. Oh, he's here. I'm sorry. He was hiding behind the car. Mr. Quillis, you may come forward, but I will finish that statement. The bill will be laid over, Senator Mitchell. Mr. Quillis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tony Quillis again from Hospitality Minnesota and the Minnesota Association of Visitors and Convention Bureau. And to go back again, a little bit of history, Madam Chair, this started, at least in my experience, with the City of Woodbury in 2017, where the City of Woodbury came in and proposed to go above the 3% that they could do under existing statute, a 2% above that, and use it for capital expenses for Central Park. Subsequent years, when they've come back and asked, they've asked for the 3% above what they can do in existing law and then use it for capital improvements. We've opposed all of those over the years, Madam Chair, and now this one would come back. Subsequently to us opposing those for them to go above, as the mayor mentioned, they have subsequently now, under existing law, enacted the 3%. And then they're going to start collecting that, and it's supposed to be used for promotion and marketing, and they're going to start collecting that on April 1st of this year. They haven't even started collecting it yet, Madam Chair, and then this proposal would take the 2/3 of the 3% and 1/3 into the visitors and convention and use it for promotion and marketing and creation of a visitors convention bureau. So it's very similar to what we just talked about in that hybrid model that we saw for Plymouth.
But Mr. Quillis, it's within the 3%.
It's within the 3%.
It's not an additional
3%. This would not be on top of.
We need to make sure we understand that.
Correct. This would not be on top of the 3. This would be the existing 3 and then 2/3 for capital improvements and 1/3 for the creation of visitors and promotion and marketing through a visitors and convention bureau. And Madam Chair, concern again over the capital improvements. Central Park is a great facility. It's got a library hooked up into it, YMCA, Senior Citizen Center, Bielenberg Sports Complex is very impressive. But again, using the lodging tax to go through and make capital improvements at those facilities, we think the nexus just isn't there. And we think specifically for Central Park, Madam Chair, the city, you have heard just last week, the sales and use exemption for construction materials for Central Park. There is a bonding proposal from the city in for Central Park to go through. They've partnered with Washington County also. So we think there are other options for them to be able to use specific to that Central Park and for the other athletic facilities, Madam Chair. So just wanted to get that on record that we would be opposed to using those.
Senator Putnam is next. Senator Nelson, Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if I missed this in the early part of the discussion, but where is this notion that the sales tax should not be used towards capital investment? Is that in the statute? Is that part of individual decisions when these particular bills are constructed, or is it convention?
Senator Putnam, the law states what the purposes are, and the reason why they have to have a special thing is because they want to use it for purposes other than those that are authorized in law.
So, Madam Chair, that was part of my curiosity. Is that sort of across the board with all?
With lodging taxes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Senator Nelson.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, to kind of what Senator Putnam was alluding to, I have to wonder, to the existing law, and why that was put into place. I don't know if anyone was here then, if you were here, Madam Chair. Well, but my question is, was it truly to keep some separation between the Visitors and Convention Bureau and the city itself, and particularly to bonding, to maybe to prevent this using lodging taxes for capital bond proceeds?
Senator Nelson, I recall, and I don't know when the lodging tax was first authorized, but the argument made for it was that the industry is willing to, in a sense, tax itself in order to promote tourism and the marketing of their area to bring in additional revenue and additional economic activity within the hospitality, particularly hotels and so forth, and to encourage their, it's kind of like churning the dollars. Mm-hmm. They impose the tax, they're willing to have it on themselves, but the purpose has to be to improve the industry itself within the jurisdiction. That's what I recall the original understanding of it. I don't know when it was first imposed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Not imposed, when it was first authorized.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Seems we're changing the purpose here repeatedly.
Yes. Sir, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, so this process that we're going through has been well-worn. Many cities that have come before the committee with their own capital improvement proposals, and you, the legislature, have granted that. So what we're asking for, to be able to use these dollars for capital facilities, has already been tax policy. You've done it on an individual city-by-city basis, and frankly, we're asking for what you've already granted in the past. Some have been more aggressive in terms of their asks. Some have been more restricted. They come in various forms, various natures. And I think the uses, as we've talked about, are very symbiotic between the recreation facilities and tourism and marketing. So we're not asking for a new tax policy here. We're asking for that which other cities have been granted by the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Ms. Pollack to maybe provide a memo to us about the history of this. And I think it was Mr. Quillis who mentioned that some of those exemptions or exceptions were ones that were grandfathered in rather than being ones that were granted since the tax was authorized. So we'll take a look at that. Senator Mitchell.
Madam Chair, I was going to talk to you about this online, and I don't want to conflate it with this particular issue. But I was asked by the county of Washington County. Evidently, there's a unique situation. I already talked to council. It didn't seem appropriate to bring an amendment to this because of the unique situation. But Washington County, for example, does not have enough emergency housing or temporary emergency housing for people. And they almost uniquely use Woodbury for the entire county, Woodbury hotels for their lodging. So they had asked me to bring a lodging tax exemption for the county for the purpose of emergency housing. I think this is a much broader issue. So I'm just putting that on the record. as something down the road we might want to think about as we continue to see communities add lodging taxes. Again, I didn't want to conflate that, but
certainly. Thank you, Senator Mitchell, for that information. Any further discussion or comments for Senator Mitchell about Senate File 475? Otherwise, then, thank you very much. And Senate File 475 is laid over. Senator.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Rest, and Senate File 1413 is before the committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1413 provides for a sales and use tax exemption relative to the situation that we found ourselves in a couple of years ago, and let's hope it's not going to be repeated this week, with regard to fees that were paid for during what was called the polar vortex, an event that happened in February for 4 days. Not these particular 4 days, but 4 days in February, where there were very high costs with regard to providing natural gas, there's a period in which the sales tax is foregone and then recovered during the winter months, and then recovered from May through October. And the polar vortex had an extraordinary cost, and then ordinarily would have been imposed later, and of course it was. And what is being asked for here is a retroactive sales tax exemption and provisions for a refund in subdivision 2, allowing the utilities to apply for a refund of the sales taxes that have been collected and remitted under the provisions of the cost recovery plan that was put in place by the PUC. So we are asking here to have those sales taxes to be refunded, and it's not an amount of no consequence. It was really a gut punch for the companies as well as for its customers. So if you look at the revenue estimate, you would see that for FY 2024, and again, this was also something that we took up last year, that it's a $7.5 million sales tax refund, and it actually extends because the recovery period also was extended. So it's more than just it's more than just a one-time hit. And there was by the utilities that are impacted, it's almost $600 million. So it's a considerable revenue impact, Mr. Chairman. That is what is in the language of the bill, and I direct your attention again to the revenue explanation. It is a retroactive provision, and I have a couple of testifiers here to speak to it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rest, and I think we will do testifiers and then go to member questions. I believe the first name I have for a testifier is Jamie Fitzke. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Klein and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Jamie Fitzke, Director of Government Affairs and standing in for Seth Demerit, Manager of Regulatory Rates and Policy at CenterPoint Energy. CenterPoint Energy is one of four utilities in Minnesota that was impacted by the gas spike in February of 2021. This increase in natural gas prices resulted in extraordinary costs of about $400 million in a five-day period for CenterPoint Energy and its customers. In the normal course of business during the winter months, these costs would have been sales tax exempt for our residential customers. But due to the collection of these costs over a 63-month period, our customers would be subject to a sales tax of around $7. CenterPoint Energy supports Senate File 1413 as it offers relief to our customers for costs that would typically not have been subject to a sales tax. We'd like to thank Chair Rest and Senator Nelson for authoring this bill. Thank you for your time this morning, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzke. And next I have Chris Arend. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Klein and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Chris Arend. I'm Senior Director of Tax Planning for Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy supports Senate File 1413, and we'd like to thank Senators Rest and Nelson for their work on it. I agree with the comments provided by Ms. Fiske that this bill is needed to provide helpful relief for our customers. Like other utilities, Xcel Energy incurred extraordinary costs during a brief period in February of 2021. The sales tax on these costs is about $8 per residential customer, and while this may not be significant, it is still an important thing to get right. Therefore, we are working with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to seek clarification in law on behalf of our customers, and we ask for your support. Thank you for your time and for your support for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Arend. And then lastly, Mr. John Purdy. Welcome, Mr. Purdy. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Klein and members of the committee. My name is John Purdy. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm a retired state of Minnesota boiler inspector and presently hold a CLEFA license for steam operations and attend to boilers in the Minneapolis area. I've inspected all the boilers in downtown Minneapolis and their surrounding area out to Lake Street, western out to St. Louis Park, and north into the northern Minneapolis area. So I'm quite familiar with the steam boilers and heating operations of our state. I support this bill as it is, but I've added some changes that I think would be necessary. I became familiar with the changes that are necessary because the taxes, sales taxes that apply on natural gas are taxes. They're not rates. They're not gas rates. Gas rates are set by the utilities in conjunction with the Public Utilities Commission. They stand alone, and they don't have to follow or abide by the Constitution, Article 1, Section 1. Taxes shall be uniform upon the same class of subjects. Now, I've alluded to, and I can testify that, and so does their tariffs specify that there are differences. There are not uniform definition for residential customers. CenterPoint has fourplex and smaller in general. Over here in St. Paul, it's duplex and smaller. They're supposed to, and I represent an owner who I work for, which is one of my boilers in Minneapolis, who has a fourplex. It's an eightplex now. It used to be a fourplex. Now there's, you know, an eightplex times two residents per person. That's 16 people in that building. It's a central heating system. So the utility bill comes to the landlady who passes it through in the form of part of the rent. Now, if it comes through, and this is experience I'm speaking to, when the bill comes through, if the bill is rated commercial, it's not tax-free in the winter. If it's rated up at the small little block letters on the top of the bill, if it says residential, it's rated tax-free in the middle of the winter, for the 6 months of the winter. So there's a difference between commercial and residential when it comes to taxation. The rating side of the bill, or the charges for the gas, there's a variable difference, a small difference. The natural gas for a residential, the cost of the gas is the same for residential versus commercial. What's different is on the commercial rate, they're allowed a smaller transportation or a smaller delivery charge, a lower delivery charge per therm, per unit of sale. So what happens is there's a tilting point. On this fourplex I'm speaking of, or really eightplex, you're right at the edge where commercial versus residential, commercial is a better deal. We thought it would be a better deal. We were misrated as residential because CenterPoint still thought we were a fourplex, but we were an eightplex. So once they found that out, because we were asking them for not a rebate, but a
relief.
Not relief either. An incentive to install some equipment that would save energy. And they said that only applies for commercial accounts. Well, we said we are a commercial account. They said, no, you're residential. And then we said, well, we got 8 units. So they said, yeah, you're right, you're commercial. So they gave us the allowance, the not rebate, but money to build these things, to put this equipment in. And then we suddenly see, boy, maybe we'll get a better deal on the bill. As it turned out, we did get a better deal because CenterPoint was good enough to give us 2 spreadsheets to work with. And we plugged in the yearly usage, both commercial and residential, found out commercial is a better deal. But their spreadsheets didn't include the taxes. And suddenly we get the commercial bill, and it's more than we thought it would be. So we thought we just shot ourselves in the foot. And of course, I'm the one that talked him into it. Now I got a higher bill. Well, we went to the state, we said, why is it that we've got this building here? It's a residential purpose building. We're looking through all of these different resources. Minnesota 8110.
Mr. Purdy.
Fact sheet, pardon me?
Apologize to interrupt. Can I ask you to try to wrap it up in about the next minute here?
All I'm saying is I support this bill, but it's important to have a differentiation. Don't take the utilities definition of residential for tax purposes. Residential is your own definition. Your own definition. And it's not just duplex and smaller, and it's not just fourplex and smaller. Okay. That's what I'm asking you to do.
Thank you, Mr. Purdy. I appreciate your testimony. Okay. Any questions from the committee for testifiers or for Senator Rest? Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. No questions. Just I'm glad this bill is moving forward. For those of you who were here in 2022, this was part of our omnibus tax bill, and I'm glad Senator Rest is moving it forward.
Senator Rest, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think Mr. Purdy has a point of looking at, you know, if the rates get different, then and the costs are different because of that, then the sales tax that's imposed on that is more from one set of circumstances to another. And although that's not directly related, it's a more basic question rather than the polar vortex one. I want to thank him for coming here today and sharing his views with us.
Appreciate that,
Mr.
Senator.
Chairman, I have nothing further, and I would request that you lay the bill over.
Appreciate that, and I also want to endorse your sentiments about Mr. Purdy's testimony. It sounds like it may be a matter for a separate bill that would go before the Energy Committee, but certainly a valid concern, and thank you for enlightening us on that matter. And with that, Senate File 1413 is laid over for possible inclusion.
And then, Mr. Chairman, you may adjourn the committee.
There being no further business before this committee, we stand adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Thank you. There was an interesting twist on how all this works.